Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 8th. Melba J. Clark Hansard passed away peacefully at her home Saturday, February 3rd. Melba was born in Crane, Texas, to Charles Alexander and Hazel Aberick Clark. Melba grew up in Midland, where she attended Midland High School. She met her best friend and husband of 49 years in Odessa. George and Melba were married in 1956. They nurtured a home and community alongside their four sons in La Mesa, Texas. They served faithfully as members of First Baptist Church La Mesa for more than 50 years. Melba is preceded in death by her parents, also by her brothers Edward Clark and Richard Clark, and husband Judge George H. Hansard Sr. She is survived by her four sons, George H. Hansard Jr. of Fort Stockton and his wife Stacy, Mark Hansard of St. Louis, Missouri and his wife Susan, Jeff Hansard of Midland, and Sam Hansard of Lubbock, as well as 10 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. Family will receive friends and loved ones Friday, February 9th, between 4 and 6 p.m., at Brannan Funeral Home in La Mesa. Services will be officiated by Brother Jim Medley on Saturday, February 10th at 10:30 a.m. at Dawson County Cemetery in La Mesa, Texas. The families suggest memorials be made to First Baptist Church of La Mesa or to a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the care of Brannan Funeral Home. To send condolences online, please visit www.brennanfuneralhome.com. Pamela Jean Babcock, age 52, passed away on January 25th in Abilene. A memorial service will be held in her honor on February 10th at 2 p.m. at Homeline Baptist Church in Midland at 3500 Annetta Drive. Carolyn Stovall Ryan, age 81, of Midland, passed away on Monday, February 5th, in Midland. Funeral services will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Friday, February 9th, at Willowbrook Funeral Home, with Pastor Brad Smith officiating. Interment will follow at Rest Haven North Memorial Park in Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Maria Socorro Spencer, age 73, of Midland, passed away February 2nd. Memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, February 10th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, February 12th. Cates says syphilis cases rising at alarming rates. The story was written by Carol A. Cates, Chief Nursing Officer, Odessa Regional Medical Center. I thought long and hard about if I should write about syphilis rates increasing because conversations about sexually transmitted diseases, or STDs, can sometimes carry moral implications. I decided that I did need to write about this disease because, regardless of the moral implications, syphilis is a medical issue. Treatment can only occur when people seek care, and that means talking about the possibility of an STD. I hope by talking about it here, someone will have the confidence to talk to a healthcare provider if they are concerned about syphilis or any other STD. The current statistics for syphilis are very concerning. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reported syphilis cases rose in the U.S. by 80% between 2018 and 2022. According to the Texas Department of State Health Services, the TXDSHS, Texas syphilis cases rose by 22% between 2021 and 2022, and the 2022 rates are double of those from 2018. The scariest part of these statistics is the increasing number of cases that are affecting pregnant women. Syphilis, if untreated during pregnancy, can be passed to the newborn and can be fatal. A syphilis infection in a newborn is called congenital syphilis. In 2021, TXDSHS reported the highest number of congenital syphilis cases ever recorded at 685. Preliminary 2022 data has shown another huge jump in congenital syphilis to 950 cases, a 39% increase in 1 year. In 2020, 220 stillbirths and infant deaths in the U.S. were related to congenital syphilis. According to the CDC, the risk of death for congenital syphilis is as high as 40%. Syphilis is a very old disease. It is caused by the bacteria Treponema pallidum. Forms of that bacteria have been detected in human remains from 2,000 years ago. It became a worldwide disease about 500 years ago. Historians believe that spread was largely due to the abuses that accompany slavery. Because it is an STD, historically, people have been reluctant to talk about syphilis. In the days before disease transmission was fully understood, it was frequently called a disease of a rival group or a country as a way of saying, culturally, that is not our problem. The Germans and English called it the French pox, Russians called it the Polish sickness, and the French called it the Neapolitan sickness. The Japanese called it the Canton rash or the Chinese ulcer, just to name a few examples of that cultural distancing. Many experts in disease transmission feel that people not wanting to talk about syphilis and the need to distance oneself from the disease is still an issue. That reluctance means people often do not seek treatment in early stages, and they spread the infection. Another contributor to the problem is that many people think that syphilis, because it is such an old disease, no longer exists, and don't take preventative measures or discuss it with their sexual partner. Syphilis has several stages that can last weeks to years. The first symptoms arise between 10 and 90 days after infection, with an average of 21 days to first symptoms. Primary syphilis usually starts with a single sore called a canker in, on, or around the penis, vagina, anus, rectum, lips, or mouth. There is usually just one, but there can be multiple sores. Cankers are usually firm, round, and painless, and heal in 3 to 6 weeks with or without treatment. Syphilis is spread by direct contact with a canker. However, if the person does not receive treatment, syphilis will progress to the secondary stage. That stage includes skin rashes and/or mucous membrane lesions on one or more areas of the body. The rash usually does not cause itching. Other secondary stage symptoms include fever, swollen lymph nodes, sore throat, patchy hair loss, headaches, muscle aches, weight loss, and fatigue. Just like with primary stage syphilis, the symptoms will resolve with or without treatment, but without treatment, syphilis will progress to latent and possibly the tertiary stage. Latent syphilis has no signs or symptoms and can last for years. Tertiary syphilis is rare and can appear 10 to 30 years after infection and can be fatal. Tertiary syphilis can affect the brain, nervous system, eyes, heart, blood vessels, liver, bones, and joints. Symptoms depend on the organ system affected. If you or your partner notice sores that could be cancers, or there is a chance you have been exposed to syphilis, seek medical attention with your primary health care provider. If you do not have a primary health care provider, the Ector County Health Department has expertise in all communicable diseases and can assist you in finding the right testing and treatment for syphilis and other STDs. The treatment for syphilis is most commonly a one-time shot containing penicillin. For someone with a penicillin allergy, there are other antibiotic choices. But for pregnant women, penicillin is the only option, so they may need to undergo penicillin desensitization to treat syphilis. Unfortunately, because of the rapid rise of syphilis cases, we are also seeing a shortage of penicillin in the form needed for a shot. As a final thought, please remember prevention, which is even more crucial with the penicillin shortage. The best prevention for syphilis is abstinence, followed by protected sex, using a condom. If you have syphilis or any other STD, do not have unprotected sex until you have been treated and have spoken about unprotected sex with a healthcare provider. Even if you are having protected sex, whether you have an STD or not, please discuss the possibility of STDs with your partner. Odessa Police Department announces induction of new officers. Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke has announced the induction of 4 new police officers into the Odessa Police Department. The graduation ceremony took place Friday afternoon at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Officer Ethan Ryan McCown. Officer McCown is 26 years old and was born and raised in Odessa, graduating from Permian High School. His hobbies include spending time with his family and spending time outdoors. Regarding his new career, McCown is most looking forward to the experiences and training he will receive. Inspired by the training staff, he hopes to one day teach new police recruits and to be part of the SWAT team. Officer Odelia Soto. Officer Soto is 35 years old and was born and raised in Odessa, graduating from the Career Center. In her spare time, she enjoys going to the gym, cooking, and being with family. Soto is most looking forward to helping people every day and doing her part to address crime within the community. One day, she hopes to become a homicide detective or in the traffic unit. Officer Joseph Gabriel Valerio. Officer Valerio is 29 years old, born in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and graduated from Wink High School in Wink. His hobbies include lifting weights, reading, and working on computers. With a passion for service and a dedication to Odessa, Valerio is eager to make a positive impact on this community. He's excited to explore the diverse opportunities within the Odessa Police Department and discover the path where his skills and values can best serve the public. Officer Mario Julian Vera. Officer Vera is 33 years old, born in Honduras, and raised in the Bronx, New York. He is a graduate of Kingsbridge High School. In his spare time, he enjoys playing soccer. Fira is most looking forward to serving and making an impact in the Odessa community. He hopes to one day become a canine officer. Master Gardeners, Grow Your Own Potatoes. This was written by Debbie Rowland and Emmy Almschneider, Master Gardeners. The average American eats 125 pounds of potatoes per year. If you love them like most people, we hope this article will help you grow your own. Potatoes are a cool season crop, growing best in 61 to 64 degrees Fahrenheit and requiring 20 inches of rain or irrigation to mature. There are many cultivars producing a wide range of colored tubers. The potato is a tuber, and they are classified depending on how long that variety takes to mature. They are an early season crop, meaning that now is the time to plant them, but keep in mind that the plants and the tubers need to be protected from a late heavy frost. You grow potatoes by using pieces from the potato itself that are free of chemicals and look healthy. Alternatively, one can buy small tubers, seed potatoes, that have been started commercially. You can sprout your own seed potatoes by dividing a tuber into pieces about the size of a medium egg with at least one eye or bud. A potato will get buds, commonly called eyes, that sprout and grow into a new plant. This piece will provide food until the plant develops its own root system. Place the pieces in a single layer with the eyes, buds, faced up. When the sprouts from the bud have grown to about 3/4 of an inch, they are ready to plant. Potatoes need full sun and very loose soil. If the soil is too heavy or packed, the tubers will be small and the numbers will be fewer. To prepare, till or spade your soil to a depth of 12 inches. Potatoes need their fertilizer early in the season, so apply a complete fertilizer such as 10-20-10 to your pots or in-ground garden before planting, being sure to follow package directions. Next, use your hoe to flatten about 1 inch of the soil above the fertilizer. Then plant your seed pieces 12 inches apart about 3 weeks before the last frost. You can protect the young shoots from a late heavy frost by covering them with row cover, straw, or newspaper. When your plants are about 4 inches tall, reapply fertilizer beside each plant and water in. While your potatoes are growing, be sure to keep watering them on a constant schedule. Lack of water, then overwatering, can cause cracks. Unless grown under black plastic, not a good idea in our climate, potatoes are commonly hilled. Hilling increases the quality and the yield. Soil is pulled toward the plant as it grows, which allows more potatoes to form in the soil and prevents the potatoes from turning green and unpalatable. You can use mulch for this when the plant is 8 to 10 inches tall. When the tops of your plant begin to die and the tuber skin firm, they are ready to harvest. You can perform a test dig to see if they are ready. If they are, dig under the plant with a shovel or spade, being careful not to pierce the tubers. Pull the vine off and let the potatoes dry. Store them in a cool place that has air movement. If you are more a sweet potato person, be sure to check out this article on our blog. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686 4700. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on Resources.
Food poisoning. Deadly listeria outbreak linked to dairy company. A California cheese and dairy company is the source of a decade-long outbreak of listeria food poisoning that killed two people and sickened more than two dozen, federal health officials said Tuesday. New lab and inspection evidence linked soft cheeses and other dairy products made by Rizzo Lopez Foods of Modesto, California, to the outbreak, which was first detected in June 2014, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said. Since then, at least 26 people in 11 states have been sickened. They include a person who died in California in 2017 and one who died in Texas in 2020, CDC officials said. On Monday, the company recalled more than 60 soft cheeses, yogurt, and sour cream sold under the brands Tio Francisco, Don Francisco, Rizzo Bros, Rio Grande, Food City, El Huache, El Ordenena, San Carlos, Campesino, Santa Maria, Dos Ranchitos, Casa Cardenas, and 365 Whole Foods Market. The CDC previously investigated cases of food poisoning tied to queso fresco and other similar types of cheese in 2017 and 2021, but there was not enough evidence to identify a source. New illnesses were reported in December, prompting CDC to reopen the investigation. The strain of listeria linked to the outbreak was found in a cheese sample from Rizzo Lopez Foods. Federal officials confirmed that queso fresco and cojita made by the company were making people sick. The recalled products were distributed nationwide at stores and retail deli counters, including El Super, Cardenas Market, Northgate Gonzales, Superior Groceries, El Rancho, Velarda, Food City, La Michoacana, and Numero Uno Markets. Listeria infections can cause serious illness and, in rare cases, death. People who are pregnant, older than 65, or have weakened immune systems are particularly vulnerable. Symptoms like muscle aches, fever, and tiredness usually start within 2 weeks after eating contaminated foods, but can start earlier or later. The CDC said consumers who have these products should discard them and thoroughly clean the refrigerator, counters, and other contact sites. Listeria can survive in the refrigerator and easily contaminate other foods and surfaces.
Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 8th. Child-rearing philosophies clash in new relationship. Dear Abby, I have been in a relationship for more than a year. We met at the gym. We have similar interests and are both normally caring and loving to each other. We also have similar senses of humor. We moved in together too quickly after only 6 months. Our attempt at blending our kids and families has hit a lot of hard bumps. He is a very assertive and aggressive parent, while I'm the opposite. He has helped me with pointers and advice on taming my two boys' attitudes, and both have changed the attitudes they had before and are doing good. The problem is, my boyfriend has become controlling to the point that when anyone seems a little disrespectful or doesn't do what they were supposed to or told to do, he gets in the middle of it. When we have an argument, if we disagree on something, he curses at me and calls me names. This has become a deal-breaker for me. He says I spoil and coddle my kids, which is a deal-breaker for him. He always apologizes afterward, but then he does it again. This may seem obvious, but is this as clear as I'm thinking that we should break up? Signed, Somewhat Hopeless. Dear Somewhat Hopeless, because your gentleman, I use the term advisedly, friend, becomes verbally abusive when you have a disagreement, recognize that he continues to do it because it works for him. The example his behavior has set for your boys is atrocious. I'm pleased that you are thinking as clearly as you have been. Offer him the option of couples counseling. If he refuses, for your kid's sake, if not for your own, move out and move on. The person you're involved with isn't just aggressive as much as he is a bully. Dear Abby, my brother, who is 48, has mental issues. I have always tried to be there for him as much as I could without interfering with his independence. Although he is antisocial, he isn't dangerous to anyone. He has low self-esteem and takes things literally. My parents have always been emotionally detached, but my brother has always craved Dad's acceptance. Because he felt that Dad favored me, he pushes me away and isolates himself. I have tried to stay in contact, and if I see him at the store, I speak to him, but he is so full of anger. Should I keep trying even though it's painful? I have tried telling him how I feel about the situation, but he lives in his own little world and can't relate to my feelings. I just worry that if he were to pass, I would feel guilty for not trying harder, but it makes it so difficult and painful. Signed, Facing Obstacles in Pennsylvania. Dear Facing Obstacles, you are a good sister, but for your brother's sake, as well as your own, it may be time to distance yourself emotionally from his mental problems. He may treat you the way he does because he is incapable of interpersonal relations, not because of anything you did or didn't do. Because you would feel guilty if you disengaged entirely, contact your brother every 6 or 8 weeks or so to check in. If you encounter him in a store, be polite. If he's angry or belligerent, back off, continue your shopping, or leave. Please don't take this as personally as you have. Your brother is unwell. You can't fix what's wrong with him. Follow your conscience, which is more than your parents have been doing, and forgive yourself for not being able to do more.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.